You're listening to the Q's Podcast, episode 100. Welcome, welcome, welcome. It brings me deep and great pleasure to welcome you to this milestone show, the 100th episode of the Q's Podcast. I'm James Lenz, your host and the founder of the Q's Podcast. In addition to welcoming you to this very special episode, I want to thank each and every one of you for all the podcasts you have listened to along the way. Some of you will remember that the pilot of the Q's Podcast aired back in October of 2016. Since then, it has been so wonderful to have guests from all walks of the credit union industry and beyond on the show. We've talked about everything from strategy to leadership to governance. We've had shows that focus on data mining and on cultures of accountability and how to manage the media and on everything in between. A little more than a year ago, Lisa Holgraf started hosting Q's Podcast Episodes 2. She is a senior editor for Q's Credit Union Management Magazine, and she'll be co-hosting today. Welcome, Lisa.
James, it's great to be here. Thanks so much for having me on this most auspicious occasion. I'm curious, because I'm a reporter, what's the fondest memory you have over the 100 episodes? Do you have a great story to tell?
Well, that's a good question, Lisa. First of all, I've enjoyed it tremendously. I've gotten to meet a lot of interesting folks, both in and out of the credit union space. And I'd say one thing I could pick out, perhaps one of my fondest memories from the History of the Q's Podcast, is hearing from a financial services leader who was applying for an executive level position at a credit union in my home area of Green Bay. That is where I have my home office. I work remote. This is where I do all the recording and editing for the show. And most of my other work for Q's as well as professional development manager. But because he was new to credit unions, and he's a lifelong learner, always willing to study, so he knows that podcasts are great for him. He did a search for podcasts. He found the Q's Podcast, and he found it highly valuable going from the bank industry to the credit union industry. He wasn't so sure, but he really found out it is about people helping people. He found the Q's Podcast to be a great resource. He reached out to me on LinkedIn, and he wanted to share that. And he's a big fan of the show, and I appreciate him listening to that.
So what about this executive right there in Green Bay? Did he actually get that job after he started listening to the Q's Podcast?
Yes, this individual did get that leadership position he was seeking with the credit union. So a happy story there. And it was great that the podcast was able to support him in his needs.
I love that. I love that.
But it's neat that this podcast is unlike any other form of media because you can take it on the go. You know, you can't watch a video while you're in a car. You can't, you know, read articles when you're walking or biking, but you can have earbuds in there and listen to the show while you're mowing the lawn or working out. So it's pretty neat that way.
So you and I have been working for quite a few weeks now to create a really exciting and very different kind of show today for the milestone anniversary of the Q's Podcast. For episode 100. I wonder, can you bring our listeners in on what we've been preparing for today's show?
Yes, Lisa. Well, on most episodes of the Q's Podcast, we speak with just one guest. This show is going to be different. For one thing, this milestone 100th episode, we turn the topics over to you, our Q's Podcast Nation, our listeners. So thank you all so much for those who submitted questions, and we had a lot of them submitted. We appreciate you doing that because you helped develop the show that we're going to see here today. We regret not being able to include all of them here, but we will be able to use these additional questions on future shows and to help us choose topics for future shows. So thank you so much. So thank you also to the experts who recorded answers to each of the questions that you'll hear today. You'll find links for each of their companies on the show notes. That page can be found at cumanagement.com/podcast100. For this show, we'll be focusing on three questions from listeners in Austin, Texas, St. Louis, Missouri, and Pelham, Alabama. Our experts are based in such far-flung locations as Seattle, Scottsdale, Arizona, Memphis, Tennessee, Austin, Texas, Kansas City, Missouri, Birmingham, Alabama, and the European country of Poland. You'll hear the exact wording of the questions in just a moment, but in a quick summary, they are about whether credit unions can reopen branches 100% by Thanksgiving, how to reach members of the younger generations, the millennials and Gen Z, and what credit unions will look like in 25 years.
I can't wait to get started, James. Shall we get started?
Yes, let's do it. right. Our first question comes from Q's member, Ron Krause. Ron is chairman of the board of $2 billion Together Credit Union in Fenton, Missouri.
My name is Ron Krause. I work with Together Credit Union in St. Louis, Missouri. I'm a board member. And I want to thank you guys and congratulate you guys on your 100th episodes of the podcast. You guys are providing a very important tool for our industry and for our members and employees and staff. So thank you very much for your service. My question for you for the episode is, can you discuss your most aggressive estimate of the timing on full reopening of financial institutions at post-COVID? Do you think credit unions can look forward, for example, to full reopening 100% of employees by Thanksgiving? Let me know. Thanks. And I look forward to your answer.
Our first perspective in this very timely and important question comes from Mike Carter, EVP of SRM, or Strategic Resource Management, based in Memphis, Tennessee. SRM is a Q Solutions Bronze provider that helps financial institutions lower their costs, boost their revenues, and improve their automation. Here are Mike's thoughts on reopening branches 100% by Thanksgiving.
When I think about the timing of all this, and it's been pretty heavy on everybody's mind, there's no doubt about that. In all that I know for certain is no one's been right yet. I think the fundamental problem is that no one understands there is no reopening. We're not going to reopen our credit unions or any other of our institutions in the sense that we lock the doors and we open the doors and now things just pick up where they left off. Just to clear the air, there's absolutely no way I would spend any time thinking about a full reopening by Thanksgiving. That pandemic is still not contained in the U.S., and we're approaching Labor Day, and not to be too crass, but the virus still has plenty of wood to burn and plenty of opportunities to burn it in our population. There will never be a reopening for credit unions, even if the flames of COVID-19 do finally cool from a pandemic to an endemic. The impacts COVID has had on how members live, how they do their banking, see the world, are already ingrained into their thoughts and actions. These changes in these areas will not evaporate once someone sounds the all clear. Credit unions with a future in the new normal have already had their grand opening into a radically different context in which they serve their members. In other words, they're already reopened because they're serving members now in a very similar form to what they will need to for the foreseeable future. In any credit union whose plans for the future envision reopening to something even remotely approaching a pre-pandemic state will be another of the casualties of COVID-19.
We're also pleased to bring you the thoughts of Steve Ryder, president of Bankography, on this very key question of when credit unions might open 100%. Based in Birmingham, Alabama, Bankography provides consulting services, software tools, and marketing research to financial institutions to support their branch, product, and brand positioning strategies. Q's is pleased to have Bankography as a Q supplier. Here's what Steve has to say.
I don't necessarily think there's a one-size-fits-all answer to that. Instead, the pace of reopening is going to vary across geographies, just as we see broad variance in COVID case rates in different regions of the country. As case rates decrease in certain regions, we'll see institutions fully reopen their branch networks in those parts of the country. But in regions where outbreaks remain severe, you'll see more caution in terms of full reopening. So from that perspective, I guess I have to answer no in terms of 100% of full reopening by Thanksgiving. But it's a little more nuanced than that. Keep in mind, not all reopenings are going to be permanent. Instead, we're probably going to see some phases of branch reopening and then closing again as the pandemic expands or recedes. Given the outbreaks we've seen in this early phase as high schools and colleges have returned and reopened, and given how many expert predictions we've heard that colder weather could accelerate the spread of the virus, Thanksgiving seems an awfully aggressive and probably unrealistic target, especially in that there's no plausible prediction of a vaccine by then. And finally, you know, we may not see full reopening to pre-pandemic branch levels at all. Across the country, I've spoken to a number of credit union executives, and one of the things I hear repeatedly is that some institutions are keeping some of their branches in reserve. What I mean by that is that if they have multiple branches in a close geographic cluster, the credit union may keep one of those closed. And that way, if there is an outbreak and a branch that reopened needs to close for sanitization because an employee or a member who visited later showed positive test for COVID, then they can quickly open one of those reserve branches, knowing that it's clean and good to go, and they can bring service in that corridor. The other factor is that the pandemic has forced many of our members to try out or increase their use of the online channels and the call center channels. And in some demographic segments, those behaviors are going to persist even once the branches reopen. In that case, there may be permanent closures of some branches. I think it's reasonable if we can predict maybe somewhere around 75 or 80% of branches might reopen by mid-fall. But again, remember, this pandemic, it's been rolling through the nation, different regions. You know, first it was up in the Northeast, then the Southwest and South. Now we're seeing the Midwest have heightened cases. So there's almost certainly going to be places where branches can't fully reopen by Thanksgiving. We may even see some regression. You can strive for reopening the majority of your branches and bringing the majority of your employees back to headquarters, but I would say it's crucial to remain flexible and avoid any kind of firm deadlines like 100% by the end of the year or 100% by Thanksgiving. Because increased outbreaks, they might require a really quick decision to close the lobbies again. In that context, and presuming a vaccine maybe by early 2021, I'd consider spring a far more likely target than Thanksgiving for full reopening across our industry.
Thank you very much for that important question, Ron, and for lending your expertise, Mike and Steve. As credit unions deal with the COVID-19 pandemic, they're still looking to serve members and grow their organizations. Our next question addresses this pursuit of growth and member service. Here's the question from CUES member Karen Bruce. Karen is an associate board member at 1.7 billion America's First Credit Union in Birmingham, Alabama.
My name is Karen Bruce. I am an associate board member at America's First Federal Credit Union here in Birmingham, Alabama. And I found the CUES website and podcast to be beneficial as I assume my role as a recent board member addition. My question today is, what are some creative ways to actively engage millennials and Generation Z to develop long-term relationships with our credit union?
There's a lot of interest in this topic because younger members are the future of credit unions. So we have three experts on deck to give their answers to this question. The first is Ben Stangland, president and COO of Strum, a CUES supplier member based in Seattle. Strum does market intelligence, strategy development, and creative for community financial institutions. We're very pleased to bring you Ben's thoughts on this important matter.
Hello, my name is Ben Stangland. I'm the president and COO at Strum Agency. We are a marketing consulting agency for financial institutions, and we've been working with credit unions for over 30 years in many different areas, specifically in marketing. Millennials and Gen Z remain incredible opportunities for developing relationships with credit unions. There's a myth that Gen Z, a generation grown up with mobile apps, also prefers big tech for banking over traditional financial institutions. Yet 2 years of trend research affirms simply not true. The challenge is creating a brand with experiences that are simple and distinct while delivering values aligned with theirs. Millennials and Gen Z want choices, they want convenience, and they just want the knowledge that their money is safe. To many younger generations, banking is just simply not a joy. You can say that for a lot of people. They bank because they have dreams and they see banking as a tool to make those dreams happen. Some of the differences about millennials and Gen Z is the expectations of millennials are for more instant gratification and the desire to cut through red tape. For many credit unions in the industry, this is difficult. This is hard. How do you become simple? How do you deliver on speed? So whatever the best and the fastest and easiest experience, now think Amazon or Netflix, is now the expectations for all services in the future. Credit unions can actively engage by developing smarter mobile technologies and data analytics to better personalize offers at the exact moment, in the right moment, the right time for that member. If you move mountains to help a member reach their goal, save for their dream, buy their first car, you will win in long-term relationships. And that's the key.
Great perspective, right? Now we'll have more from Keith Brannon. Keith is the Chief Marketing Officer for Kasasa, Based in Austin, Texas, Casasa is a financial technology and marketing services company that provides reward checking accounts, a loan program that helps borrowers get ahead, and consulting services to community financial institutions. Here are Keith's thoughts on engaging millennials and Gen Z.
The short answer is these are both really good audiences to go after. If you were saying go after the Gen X group, I would say that group is a little bit curmudgeonly and they tend to look at what's the fine print. But for these two specific groups, millennials specifically are a very aspirational group. They also tend to respond very quickly to new things. Things they haven't seen before, they catch on quite quickly. So anything that you're doing to market something associated with the technology you provide is very good for both of these audiences. I would recommend even in like your checking account promotions or loan promotions, if you have accessibility through your device, that you make the device a part of it, because that's what they're buying in many cases. And that's how they engage. And so they naturally just bond differently to someone who is recognizing that this is how this audience wants to engage. And if you provide that, they tend to respond much more rapidly. The other thing that for both of these audiences that's really important is a certain amount of content. The interesting thing, even though the millennials are they're getting older, just like all of us, and sort of the Gen Z group, but both of these groups are, in their own opinion, undereducated about some things in financial services. It just wasn't what they were focused on early. And so they're in a period of learning, and they both like to learn. The Gen Z group, especially, they are pretty brand loyal, is what we see them becoming. If you are looking at the millennials, for sure, providing content-based engagement for them to respond to is really good. Some of them are long-form readers. Others are going to be more social, but you can take very long-form content and break it up into social, and it helps that group engage with you in multiple ways. I would also say be really brief with both of these audiences. Neither of them are going to respond to your jingle or your great tagline or your 30-second commercial. They might see it, but what they're really going to do is over time build a collage of all the little snippets of your brand that they've seen. So when someone asks me what's a really creative way to engage them, I would say there's really not one. You need a bunch of like micro engagement tactics, because that's the way both of these audiences think. And they won't give you enough time to have one really creative idea. And there is no silver bullet for these other than being consistently in front of them.
Thanks, Keith, for contributing your ideas on this 100th episode of the Q's podcast. Listeners, we have one more perspective for you about how to engage millennials and Gen Z. Jeff Fromm has been studying these two generations for more than a decade. Fromm is the author of four books and the president of FutureCast, which is a subsidiary of Barclay. Enjoy these thoughts from Jeff.
Hi, I'm Jeff Fromm. I'm a partner at ad agency Barclay. I'm the author of four books, including three books on millennials and Gen Z and a new book on purpose and sustainability. And I'm happy to share a free copy with all of you listening to this podcast. Just get in touch with me at jfromm@barclayus.com. So you may be wondering, how in the world did I end up getting into the topic of millennials and Gen Z? And it's a kind of interesting story. What happened is, in 2010, I was searching for content on Google on millennials as consumers, and I failed. And I didn't fail once. I failed again and again and again and again. And every time I would try different combinations of words to look for content, and nothing came back of interest. So I called a friend of a friend of a friend. She was the global head of research for the Boston Consulting Group. And I said, hey, I've looked on Google every way I know how, and I can find no research on millennials as consumers. I have this great idea. How about we research it together? And oh, by the way, I don't have a lot of money. How about you pay for half of this? There was a long pause. And she said, Jeff, you know the Boston Consulting Group is not in the business of paying for other people's research. I said, I knew that. She said, I'll tell you what, I'll get back to you. Now, we all know I'll get back to you is code. It's code for I'll never get back to you. But she seemed sincere, and a week later, she called me back. And she said, Jeff, we've looked, and you're right. There is no content on Google on millennials as consumers because no one's done this work. And we will do this study with you, and we will pay for half. And I did the little happy dance that we all do after having failed so many times. And in 2010 and 11, I conducted a large-scale study of millennials as consumers called American Millennials Deciphering the Enigma Generation. one thing led to another, and I published my first book and gave my first speech. And since then, I've spoken almost all over the world. Well, not everywhere. I guess I haven't been to Antarctica yet, but virtually all over the world. In fact, this year, I started my year early in January in Hong Kong talking about Gen Z before any of us had heard of anything called a virus. So that's the little backstory of my experience. I'd like to talk to you a little bit about my work on millennials and Gen Zs and credit unions. And I've actually had the chance to work with credit unions and do research on young consumers, consumers 14, 15, 16, 17. There are some interesting things. First of all, most consumers of this age don't have much of a banking relationship. They are just getting started and their habits haven't been formed. The other thing that you may find interesting is financial brands and financial topics are cool again. It used to be when you talked about banking and credit unions were sort of put in the uncool category of brands. But this group of young consumers, our research says, money matters to them and they're driven and hardworking and they're graduating from colleges looking for jobs and having trouble and money is important. So this is a big opportunity because you have this canvas where by and large, the consumer is super interested in the topic and does not have deep relationships established at this point. Having said that, there's a lot of direct and more importantly, in some cases, indirect competitors. And they don't necessarily need a banking or credit union relationship to solve their financial needs. So as I think about this opportunity, I think you have to start to build a Venn diagram and say, what's true about our credit union? What's authentic? What's our history? If you look back at our roots, why did we get started and what makes us interesting and unique? And then you have to look at this young consumer and say, what are the needs that they have? And are there some unmet needs? And are those product needs? Are those advice needs? Are those customer experience needs? Or are they related in some cases to beliefs and purpose and sustainability? Because we know Gen Z has started a lot of conversations from gun control in Florida when there was a shooting to participating in conversations on racial inequality. And so I think as you think about this, it's going to be a balancing act between driving some genuine, authentic things that matter to this cohort in terms of their beliefs. At the same time, you offer best-in-class products and reimagine your experience. And when I say reimagine, 6 months ago, I didn't think I could go to the grocery store, park in the parking lot, and get all my groceries in my car without ever going in the grocery store. And now I know it's easy to do, and there's no reason for me to go in the store. So look at this through the lens of what the consumer expects. And if you're highly consumer-centric and focused on radical convenience, I think your future will be very bright because the topic of financial matters and money is super important to this cohort. I'm Jeff Fromm. I'm grateful for the opportunity to share some thoughts with you. If you'd like a free copy of that book, again, jfromm@barclayus.com.
We're looking forward to sharing you some more insights from our listeners and expert questions, but first, a moment from our sponsor.
Members trust their credit union like no other financial institution, and leading credit unions trust Nuance to help them improve customer care and retention, create standout member experiences across voice and digital channels, and deliver powerful protection against fraud. Whether your members are making a payment, researching a new loan, or looking for investment tools, we can help you provide the kind of virtual and live assistance that boosts member satisfaction, drives incremental revenue, and empowers for agents. And by helping you delight members on digital and voice channels, we can also help you reduce live call volumes and minimize costs. Wish you could be tougher on fraudsters? While giving honest members a hassle-free authentication experience, Nuance empowers credit unions to perform secure authentication across all channels with intelligent multimodal biometrics so you can spot fraud attempts faster while making life simpler for your members and your agents serving them. Find out how we're helping credit unions like yours deliver exceptional, secure member experiences. Visit the financial services page on nuance.com today.
So far in the show, we've gone from the nitty-gritty of managing operation in the midst of the pandemic to thinking about growth by engaging young people. Now we're going to look farther out with a question about the future of credit unions. This one comes to us from CUES member Mary Gray, Director of Member Engagement at the $1.8 billion A-plus Federal Credit Union in Austin, Texas. Here's Mary's forward-thinking question.
Hi, I'm Mary Gray, and I am affiliated with A-plus Federal Credit Union in beautiful Austin, Texas, where everybody would like to visit. I have worked in many roles with the credit union, and currently my role is Director of Membership Engagement and Programs. And I have enjoyed listening to these podcasts. Number one, hearing from other experts about their experience and what they can share with us that would help me in whatever role I might be in. One thing that's positive from the pandemic is that it's opened up more time for me to be able to listen to these podcasts. So sometimes my coworkers get a little chuckled by the fact that I will send them, hey, you got to listen to this podcast because it's really going to help you. And they've always appreciated it. So I'm very flattered and honored that you have picked my question for today, but I am very curious to know what we will hear. I'm curious to know, in 25 years from now, what do you predict successful credit unions will be doing that will make them viable for survival?
To answer this question, we've turned to two experts with vision. First, let's hear from Steve Williams. Steve is a principal with Cornerstone Advisors, a CUES supplier member, and CUES strategic partner for technology and planning services based in Scottsdale, Arizona. Here are Steve's big ideas about this big picture question.
All right, James, good to talk to you. Great to see you again. I hope soon in some great hotel back to, the real meet space and people side of conferences. But in the meantime, great to connect and hi to the fantastic team at CUES. Great loaded question. And for me to answer it, I'd probably like to give you four words that come to mind 25 years out that'll be universal and eternal: purpose, talent, technology, and scale. And so let me try to break those down for you. When I imagine, I want to start by saying I think large, progressive, scaling credit unions have a great chance to be that purposeful check and balance against the for-profit model or just concentration of power. Our country is suspicious about concentration of power. So I think in 25 years, there's a great opportunity for there to be big national banks and big financial conglomerates, but also a grassroots, that can survive by staying contemporary. So when I say purpose, I think won't be out of style 25 years from now is the purpose of the cooperative movement. And that means the great credit unions will still sit there with their boards and management teams and talk about why. Why do we exist? What is our purpose? And they will spend the time to socialize that as a team. They'll spend the time to communicate that to their members, and they'll spend the time to make sure the talent that comes into that organization knows that. Because I think that's the fuel and the energy where credit unions win sometimes when they don't even have the resources. They shouldn't have won, but somehow they pulled it off. And I think a lot of times it's that purpose. When I see them out there, at a charitable event on a Saturday when they could be home with their family or staying late, I think that sense of purpose will always be the fuel of the credit union movement. On the talent side, clearly it goes back to that great old question, why would someone want to work for a financial institution in today's world when there's so much opportunity in tech and entrepreneurship and other things? And I think it goes back to credit unions are going to establish some real value propositions for why it is a great place to work, a great place to build a career. And I think that's going to mean more intentional talent strategies, and so real terrific talent leaders within credit unions who think about the whole life cycle of, building that workplace awareness and getting into recruiting and onboarding and development and management succession. So talent can't be, kind of an off to the side thing. It'll be a central part of strategy. And I think if you look at the fact that even in 2025, James, 60% of employees in a credit union will be either Gen Y or Gen Z. So they're running the place in 5 years from now, at least from a headcount perspective. They're looking at culture. They're looking at corporate mission and values. They're looking at flexible work schedules, a whole different thing than me. I was trained that you are a plebeian and you come at 8 and you beg to leave at 6 and you come in on Saturday to show that your life is less important than the company you work for. That's how I was trained. That's not how the new generation looks. So I think credit unions have a great chance to be really aligned with where the workplace is going. And we love the great, you know, insight and guidance and that executive education and programs that you provide to make great leaders, because you will have to have great leaders in that talent bucket to be thriving 25 years from now. On tech, I'd say it's the recognition 25 years from now, every company is a technology company. You know, the technology component of financial services grows every year. And I think really important with technology will be the credit unions that survive won't be kind of victims of technology. They don't understand it. They have to wait for their vendors. They'll take more assertive control of how they leverage technology. They'll have a much more tech-savvy workforce, as a great CEO, Jerry Agnes, likes to call it, you know, what we need for the future. And I think additionally, they'll really look at how do they blend the spirit of the cooperative movement, helpful people who know what they're talking about when it comes to financial services, but run that all on a very tech-enabled platform. You know, real-time digital delivery, analytics that are making that much more personalized and smart, and automation, so we're not wasting the members' money, you know, in terms of running the ship. So we have to become at least half tech companies in that time period and be very good at it and be more assertive versus kind of reactive to it. And the final one about scale, you know, a scale doesn't have to be asset size, but anything that's going to be relevant, I think, is going to know how to grow. And so things like design thinking, very much, there could be CUSOs that provide scale. And if you look at the great stories of, you know, the greatest legends of CUSO, CUNA Mutual, CU Direct, PSCU, Co-op, they all found value-adding ways to provide scale. And I think that frontier is still out there in things like digital delivery, analytics, talent management. So they will look for new ways to scale. And then within their own organizations, they'll always be thinking about a design for scale. So it won't be kind of this hustle hero worship of maybe what a credit union was in the 70s. It was, you know, 70 people, and as long as they all hustled and did their best from their hearts, they could be relevant. I think we're going to have to institutionalize some of that more into the design of the business model, into the design of our delivery and operations in the future. But I see a future, and I can see it, James, where with purpose and talent and tech and scale coming together, you know, you could see maybe not 5,000 credit unions, but several thousand credit unions really doing their job as that healthy check on the concentration of power in financial services, which is very important to a working society and a healthy society. So thanks for the time, James.
Thank you, Steve. I bet that has your strategic planning juices flowing. And to add to your thinking, we also bring you an answer from Chris Skinner. Chris is an independent commentator on the financial markets and fintech through his daily blog, The Financer. He's also the author of several books, the chair of the European Networking Forum, the Financial Services Club, and Nordic Finance Innovation, and is a non-executive director of the fintech consultancy firm 11FS. If you like Chris's thinking about the future of credit unions here in the show, you can hear more from him by attending Digital December for Directors. During this online event, he'll present about how credit unions can prosper in a post-pandemic system. Learn more and register at qs.org/DDD. Now, get ready for some insights from Chris Skinner.
25 years from now is obviously 2045. And if we went back to 1995, 25 years ago, you'd be saying, well, no one would have thought we'd have gone through what we've gone through and that we are where we are today. But credit unions, community banks, thrifts, mutuals are all still around. Many of them still doing really well because they stick to their knitting, which is community focused and doing what's right for the customer. And you can do that digitally. You can do that physically. You can interchange the two. But you really have to focus upon the question of who's the customer. That's really what it comes down to always. And there's plenty of opportunity 25 years from now to still be existing and prospering as long as you define your customer proposition well and target your customer exactly. So many people say to me, we can't compete with the big banks. And my answer is don't. Why are you trying to? You know, what you should be doing is defining your space, not trying to compete against the homogenous, faceless entity of the big bank. So many of them say, but JP Morgan Chase and Bank of America and Citi are spending billions of dollars on technology. We don't have that budget. And my answer is, you don't need that budget. You know, why are you thinking about spending billions? You don't need to. You're a small institution, and technology these days is free. It's on the cloud. It's in the apps and the APIs and the analytics. Why don't you leverage your capabilities and bring in partnerships that are relevant to your capabilities? Don't try and compete. Differentiate. You know, the whole point is you've got to do something different. So my newest theme is the biggest issue today is corporate America and corporate world stands for nothing. It's a big faceless corporate group that avoids tax and is viewed as being purely in existence for profit and shareholders. And the generations coming after my generation, the millennials, the Gen Zs, hate that. And so we have a huge opportunity right now in the pandemic and post-pandemic to stand for something. And that's where I think the big differentiation will come in the next few years, that I want to be relating to companies that relate to me, that stand for something that I believe in. And if you just stand for profit, I don't believe in that. Banking has to stand for something other than shareholders and profit. And the big banks get this too. You know, so if you look at JP Morgan Chase and Jamie Dimon and the Business Roundtable coming out with their stakeholder proposition in November last year, the intent is all there. The challenge is the delivery and the actions that go behind the intentions and the words is not there. Mm-hmm. And that's still where credit unions have a great opportunity to deliver, because we know that most of what smaller financial institutions do is that if they stand for something and say this is meaningful to us, they actually deliver it. They don't just talk about it. Take care, James.
Well, that was a lot of fun.
I thought so too, James.
I hope you've enjoyed this milestone episode, the 100th show in the Q's podcast lineup. Thank you so much to Ron, Karen, Mary for their questions and to everyone who submitted questions. And thanks to our experts, Mike, Steve, Ben, Keith, Jeff, Steve, and Chris for sharing their expert perspectives. We hope you feel more prepared to deal with the pandemic, to engage with millennials and Gen Z, and to think about the future of your credit union and the industry overall.
Hey, James, I was really excited when you told me recently that Buzzsprout has released a statistic related to the top podcasts and that the Q's podcast is among the top 10% of podcasts in 2020 in terms of audience size. It's not surprising, then, that the Q's podcast is one of the important ways that Q's offers online learning to credit union CEOs, executives, directors, and future leaders. Listeners, if you want to find out more about the many online learning benefits of joining Q's, please visit Q's.org, that's Q's.org/membership. To see our digital magazine content, please visit cumanagement.com. And for more information on our virtual education events, please visit Q's.org/events. If you liked this podcast, you might be especially interested in hearing the highly rated speakers who will be part of our Knowledge and Networking November online event. These speakers are Harry Kramer, Francesca Gino, and Sean Martin. Sean was our guest in episode 99 of the Q's podcast. To learn more about Knowledge and Networking in November, please visit Q's.org/KNN.
Yeah, there'll be a lot of great opportunities for our members to really engage with others and hear from top speakers on relevant issues. For more information about how to sponsor an episode of the Q's podcast, please email Carrie@Q's.org. That's Carrie@CUES.org. You can still submit a question for a future episode of the Q's podcast. Do so by using the online form at Q's.org/podcast. Or leaving a voicemail at the number 325-603-2589. CUES is an international credit union association. Our mission is to educate and develop credit union CEOs, executives, directors, and future leaders. To learn how CUES can help you realize your potential, visit CUES.org today.